So I have recently connected with this guy who he's a podcaster and he's really good at interviewing people and asking good questions and that kind of thing. And he runs this podcast and he's been reaching out to Narsal and somebody else about trying to, like, I don't know, work with them to do podcasty things. And neither of them seem interested. And I'm like, you're really good at interviewing people. I kind of recently had this idea that so me and Ken, who have been answering the helpline for a while, recently took a class called Circle Trainer Keeper Circle Keeper Training or something like that, where we learned how to run like a support circle, where people, just it was a whole class. It was like a 6-hour class. And I'm pretty excited about offering a support group like that. And so what I've been thinking is, since this guy Jay is a really good interviewer, I was thinking that maybe I could give him the task of the educational portion of WAR, where we get speakers and we learn stuff and we write stuff down and figure stuff out. And then instead of me doing the war room every 2 weeks as an educational thing, every 2 weeks the war room could be. And in fact, we could probably do it every week because I could do a support group every 2 weeks on Tuesday at 7:30, and then Ken could do a support group the other 2 weeks at 7:30, and we could use that to provide people with, with support instead of all education. I think it'd be a little bit more up my alley anyway. Certainly, to me, it feels it's not that I don't enjoy listening to speakers tell stuff, but I think I would really enjoy just letting people vent. Like, I have some real shit to vent about today, and this is not the space for venting. This is the space for listening to Trent because he's smart and he's done all this research and he knows all this important stuff, which is important and we need to know it. But like right now, today, like I spent 8.5 hours in the last 2 days helping some guy try to not get arrested after he got mauled by a police dog. And like, I would like to just talk about how it feels to see some to clean someone's wound who just got mauled by a police dog and then see that he got arrested anyway. And like, anyway, what do you all think about that? Either raise your hand or type in the chat. Oh, except I don't know how to make the chat. I don't know how to understand the chat. Ken. I mean, not Ken. Chuck. Same place as save chat. Okay. Okay. I know where that is. Three dots. Who can everyone? Okay. So I just changed the chat. How am I ever going to remember that? I don't know. I just changed the chat so that everybody can talk to everybody else. And I know there's not like a ton of people here today. There's 17 people here today, but I would love to hear your thoughts about do you see some value in the war room becoming a support circle and offloading the educational part of this of what I do to Ken? I'm not Ken, to Jay. And letting, sending my ideas for cool speakers to Jay, and then he'll just make the podcast with his awesome making podcast skills. So that's what he does for that's like he's a media guy. I am not a media guy. I don't know. Anyway, it just sounds like he'd be really good at that. What do you think? Can I get a thumbs up or a type in the chat and let me know if that's something that you think would be of value to people? Yeah, I mean, you're right. We might, instead of calling it the War Room. Although I didn't name it the War Room, so I don't really mind changing the name. Well, yeah, all those things are true, but I think people need them. And if I could talk Jay into doing more of the edge, yeah, I hear what you're saying. But I mean, like I've been leading this War Room for 3 years. We haven't ended the registry, right? Like I have this guy who comes on a lot. I don't know if he's here tonight. Who sent me an email the other day where he's like. Oh, your speakers are great, but none of your speakers are ending the registry. And I was like, oh, let me pull up my Rolodex of speakers who know how to end the registry. Let me just pull up that list. Like, there is not a list of speakers who know how to end the registry. People have been working on ending the registry for 30 years, right?
So people have to realize that, first of all, they got themselves on the registry. So that's they have to take culpability for one and admit.
Nobody's not taking culpability.
But Also, in the second part of it, they got to understand to unthread what has been done over the last 20 or 30 years. It's going to be so looking at so I looked at our thing in Oklahoma and I presented a possible statute or bill that I wanted to push forward. And I started looking into it and realizing that Oklahoma, in their main statute, they put a thing. I'll have to look up the statute real quick, but they put a thing in there that shows that Oklahoma can increase your registration level. The courts, blah blah blah. Anybody can increase the registration level, but directly after it, it says no court or DOC or anybody in power can decrease the level. So in order to fight or make any step downs or make any reductions in Oklahoma, you have to fight that particular part of the law first, unravel that, and then move to the next thing. So fighting the registry, all of us want the registry gone. All of us want to be able to live our normal lives, even if the registry was behind just law enforcement only, where law enforcement could access it and it wasn't public. I believe that would be a step forward from what we're doing now, because public registry, especially with all of the new AI glasses that are being able to be hacked to where they can actually identify people through facial recognition. Oh yeah, the Meta glasses are being hacked by hackers to be able to use facial recognition as they're walking by people. So not only are the flock cameras a problem, Meta glasses are now also a problem. And we're even registrants. It's funny because even registrants are buying into this. Let's go buy some Meta glasses. And they just, and then you got all of these data centers popping up that are basically just spy centers popping up in each city. So you got that. And so at some point, you're going to get into a big privacy thing, because on the street, somebody sees you with those glasses and notices that you're a registrant, and then so they notice you, and then they start attacking you, or start attacking your family, or start doing something to cause a scene. Now either your kids are getting this scene, or you're so you just there's so much stuff that's coming forward that people have to understand that there is a fight now compared to what there used to be. So it just it's there's more of a chance of getting ourselves removed now than there was in the past.
Well, I mean, like, for example, in Missouri, about a year and a half ago. We hired some lobbyists. We raised some money. We hired some lobbyists, and the lobbyists started doing just excellent work with, we have one guy in the Senate and one guy in the House who are just notorious for bringing up shitty, hurtful bills for people on the registry. Well, these two lobbyists started connecting with those two people and basically saying, like, I hear what you're saying. Like, I know that you're trying to do this thing that's going to make the world safe, but when you do that, do you realize that you're also doing this, and this other shitty thing that's not helpful? And they managed to convince these two legislators to not keep feeding those bills. And they got the in 2018, Missouri legislators tried to make a path for people to remove themselves from the registry, and they like screwed up something in the language. Not intending to make it harder, but they happened to put just some stupid words in the language of the bill that made it so if you were federal, you absolutely could never get off. No question about it. Well, they got them to re-sponsor that bill, and it passed. So, like, I think change can happen, but like I just can't do all the things, right? I mean, I can't lobby in all 50 states and run the war room, getting speakers to educate us and answer the helpline. Like, I can't do it all.
Oh, I know. And I think you when you put that offer forward a couple of weeks ago, I've had a lot in my on my plate as well. So I've kind of been where I can volunteer a little bit, but not a lot. And then I also have the OKR SALT side and the NARSALT side. Of course, Not to say anything negative towards some of those groups, but the groups have gotten to where they've fallen apart a little bit, to where they're kind of, to where they're, we lose members, we gain members, the communication's a little spotty here and there. Between states, we don't have enough communication. Oklahoma, for sure, being a red state, I know that OKRSL was kind of missing in action for a couple of years because I tried to get a hold of them. So it just the communication portion side of it and trying to get everybody to agree on one thing at one time and coming into agreement on what we need to push forward, what we want to push forward. And I'm an aggressive person. I want to be aggressive with things and I get slowed down a lot because people say that won't work, this won't work. We've already tried this. We've already tried that. So I want to, I don't care if you've tried it or not. I want to be more aggressive and try it harder or do something different to make the same thing go forward. Because if we try it and we keep saying, I've tried that and it's not going to work, and we don't try different ways of doing that, then we're never going to move forward. We're always going to be stuck in the same. I mean, in the words of Daenerys Targaryen, and until you break the will, you're not going anywhere. It's going to be the same circle over and over again.
All right. Well, that's just a question. I will keep thinking on that and talk to Ken about what days he's available, and I'm sure we will type something up and send it out, and we'll have a survey, and we'll ask people questions. And my meeting with Jay, the podcast dude, is this Friday, so I'll know more after I talk to him again.
Do have a Discord that I let people come into. I have a Discord now. To people in this group, I'm going to make sure you know. If you want the invite, let me know, or reach out to Anne. And
Well, tell you what, Trent, let's type up an email that'll go to my whole membership, because right now you're talking to 16 people here, right?
yeah.
That would be something that, if or 22 people, that would be something that I'd like to send out to the 1200 or whatever are on my whole list.
Awesome. That
Okay,
sounds
so
great.
sorry, Trent, for stealing 12 minutes of your time.
You're fine. It's actually good that we got that conversation in.
Good. I mean, honestly, I just get that a lot, like, oh, well, how are you going to end the registries? Like, I've only been doing this for 3 years. I don't like just because I put my just because I'm the last man standing holding the bag of like doing all this work doesn't mean that I know how to end the registry. Like, if I knew how to end the registry, I would have done it.
Yeah, there's a lot of scholars out there. I mean, I talked to Dr. Gerstad, and we had our Zoom meeting 3 or 4 days ago. So we did
Nice.
really, really well going back and forth. She put me in touch with Curasol and a bunch of other groups that, kind of helps with, the stuff that I'm going through with my stuff.
Yes, and
And
your wife.
so it's heavy. So, it completely involves not being able to get the care needed for our family during a really
Which is just ridiculous. I just it's insane to me that a medical care provider could say, yeah, we don't really feel like helping that one because of something her husband did 20 years ago. I can't imagine who ever decided that that was ditto with Stephanie Gerstad's main issue, which is, when you guys get old and need a nursing home, no nursing homes want to take you guys. And
Nope.
we're all aging, right? I've got a few, my partner has a few years left before he's going to need a nursing home, but listening to Stephanie talk terrifies me because
Think
there will
about
come a point in all of our lives where we are old and we need some help. And the fact that
this for
they
a
can just
second.
say no, like what?
Yep.
It's insane. Think about what for a second, Trent?
Think about this for a second. We have a person that is doing a lot of our running. She is not on the registry, but her mother is. Because her mother knew about the abuse, so they filed charges on her mother. So now she's a level four registrant. Now get this. She has dementia. Is a de she has dementia and do what?
The person
This
who's been
is one
helping
of the
them.
board one of the board members from OKRSL.
Oh,
And
wow.
her mother has dementia and she has to take her mother with dementia to the police department to check in.
Oh.
With dementia, the mother doesn't even know that why she's even being taken. doesn't remember anything, but has to go register because she's a level three and can never be removed from the registry. Now they had a thing where they said, okay, we're going to put this, try to put this bill through that says if you're incapacitated, disabled, blah, 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 that you could be pulled off the registry because you no longer can get to doing the check-ins and stuff like that. The problem, and it got canned, it got set aside. And the problem is, if they would have had this bill go through, they still would have had that language to back them up saying that you can't reduce a level in Oklahoma. So until I just figured this out last week, until you attack that part of the bill that tells them that they can't reduce or remove somebody, that part of the bill has to be deleted.
Wow.
So yeah. But okay,
Wow.
so are we ready? Do you remember where
Yes,
we were
let's
at last
start.
week?
Yes, I'm trying to reopen the message from you, which I have not found yet. Hang on. I have many emails, many different emails. Start wherever you were gonna start while I go find that.
Okay, I think we were on like question nine, but I don't.
That
It's.
seems somewhere in the ballpark. Do you remember if you sent it to my war email or my home, my personal email?
I probably sent it to your personal email.
Okay.
If I,
And
man,
was
there.
it from the SNHU or the Gmail?
It was probably from the SNHU because I don't. The
Okay.
Gmail's been acting funky lately.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure the deeper I get into this advocacy, the more they like to spam my emails or move them or get rid of them.
Okay. Well, just start talking because I haven't found it yet, and you probably have
Okay.
it right in front of you.
So I think we were on question seven. What is the specific statutory issue in your case? Statute used in my judgment was 2021 OS 1021.2, which.
Oh, do you want to start? Can I set the Zoom so that you have the ability to share?
Yes, please.
I'm about to do that. Share settings. Host tools will share. This is so hard. Don't do what?
Yeah, should be share screen.
Oh, there we go. Who can share? All participants. Okay. I think you can share.
Okay, now I don't want to leave. Meeting info, transfer
Oh,
to
don't
relevant
leave.
apps, show, chat, participation, share. There we go. Now I got to pick which screen to share. This one. There we go. Hopefully, I chose the right screen.
It says you have started. There you go. All right.
Let's move y'all over here a little bit. There we go. All right. Is it sharing my screen now?
Yes.
And it should say the specific statutory issue.
Yes.
Okay. So the specific issue is that Oklahoma has multiple states containing possession-related language, but those statutes do not all carry the same registration level. Statute in my judgment was 1021.2,
So
the Oklahoma Department of Corrections. 1021.2 is level two. That same chart lists 1024.2, purchase, procurement of or possession is level one. It also lists aggravated possession as level one. So me having six videos or pictures of on a public computer has the same level, or actually has a level with longer years than an aggravated possession person that was convicted of aggravated possession. So just because that statute was used, which is because not because the statute is a possession statute, because the statute has possession language within the statute, meaning so the possession statute just has simple possession. It says possession, procure, or blah, blah, blah. The statute that she charged me with is a statute that was originally made for people that was creating child pornography in their home, taking pictures, sending it, distributing it, and stuff like that. The problem is the statute was created so broadly that it has and or possession of child pornography in the statute. So with the and or language, it causes them to be able to use discretion to choose which statute to use. So instead of using simple possession, in my case, they use the statute of 102.1.2 instead of simple possession, because the ADA knew that would accelerate me from 15 years to 25 years. Also, the ADA knew that I could not apply to get off of the registration in 10 years if I was accelerated to level two. So she removed all
Oh,
avenues
interruption.
for me to be able to re be removed from it by using a different statute that she knew had the language within the bill. So just that discretionary, and in Oklahoma, DAs can use discretionary, they can use discretion when they choose their statutes. They're allowed to choose whichever one they believe fits you instead of which one matches the crime. So that is the problem. If the conduct described in the plea was possession based, but the statute selected in the judgment placed me into a 25-year category, then the statute selection itself became the controlling factor in adding years to my registration, because Oklahoma uses statute-based leveling. We don't have like where they assess you and tell you that you're not a risk or are a risk or a future risk, or they don't have any assessments. It's only by the statute you're convicted of. So say you're convicted of, like I said, 102.1.2, that statute controls your leveling. It controls what level they assign you. So if they assigned me the 102.4.2, I believe, 102.4.2, I would have been a level one. I would have only registered for 10 years before I could apply to be removed, and then I would be registered for 15 years, which would have pulled me off of the registry next year, at 15 years. Also, by the time I'm finished, since Oklahoma has a law that you can't start registry until the end of your probation or your sentence, I will have been on the registry for 33 years instead of just the 15 or 25 that I was actually supposed to. My registration end date is 2044, and I was convicted in 2012. So if you do the math, that's about 33 years worth of registration. And then, of course, when she accelerated me, it made it even worse, because it, so if you look at this slide right here, it shows you the listing. This is actually off of the DOC website that shows you their difference in level twos and level ones. The top one shows you the one that I was convicted of. And actually, if you look at it, it says obscene or indecent writings, pictures, solicitation in minors, and any crime under this section. But it goes on to say, and or possession child pornography. That's just part of the statute. So at somewhere in there, it has the language that says and or possession. So she was able to use either one. But if you go down and look at the bottom, the one that I should have had attached to me, because it was simple possession, was purchase, procurement, or possession of child pornography, which is 102.4.2. That's a level one. If you look below it, publication, distribution, or participation in any obscene material or child pornography. That's another one that has the same language in it, is a level one. Then you've got aggravated possession, which is also a level one. So you can see right there how she accelerated me by just choosing a statute. All right, so says, can you explain the issue with possession language and overlapping statutes? The overlap matters because Oklahoma has more than one statute that can involve possession-related conduct. So I already kind of went through that. If overlapping possession-related statutes produce different registry outcomes, then the statute selected during charging or plea negotiation can decide whether the person is treated as level one or level two. Practical terms, that can decide whether the person registered for 15 or 25 years. And then we already talked about discretion. The district attorney has discretion over which statute to charge or use in a plea. In a registry case, that same direction discretion can also control the registry consequences. Years of additional public registration can flow from the statute selected, not from individualized risk assessment. A statute number is not a small paperwork issue. It can become a decade of someone's life. I can say with certainty that a statute used in my judgment placed me in a 25-year registration category. A possession-specific statute would have placed me in a 15-year category with a possible relief pathway. And I'm sorry I'm going a little bit fast today, because I've got to get through a lot of material. and I don't want to, a possession specific statute would have placed me in a 15-year category with a possible relief pathway after t 10 years. I personally believe the statute selected in my plea extended my registration period. Proving intent is something an attorney would need to review carefully, but the broader policy concern remains either way. So we've already been through that. Someone under the statute used in my judgment can be required to register longer than someone whose offense is labeled aggravated possession, which that means I had 6 to 7 on a public computer. Somebody with thousands and thousands of videos and stuff like that can get off the registration sooner than I can. The consequences only become clear after it's locked in, which means that I had already signed the plea bargain. I went to the police department. I had already been told I was going to be a level 1, got to the police department and was told, nope, you're a level 2 because of the statute selected in your case. It's already been signed. You're done for. No ifs, ands, or buts. This is what you get. Can't change it.
Yep, I hear
Called
this. I hear this all the time.
the attorney. The attorney said, nothing we can do now that you signed the plea. Basically, the attorney washed his hands and walked away. So once the judgment lists statute, the registry system follows that statute. If a broader overlapping statute is used, the person may not understand the full registry consequences until later, after the plea is signed and judgment enters this entered, the system points back to the statute as the reason for a longer registration. That is why transparency before the plea and statutory accuracy matter, which
Right,
I
and nobody does this research ahead of time. You don't know any of this. The
no,
first time you're arrested for something, nobody knows anything. They're just like,
and neither do most criminal attorneys. My criminal attorney did not know anything about the registry side of things. He knew about criminal law and he knew what he could do on that side of things, but he had no idea about registry. He had no knowledge on registry. That's why it is so important when you get an attorney for any type of crime of this nature that you make sure that you get an attorney that is educated in sex offender registration. Because if you do not, you'll end up in my position. You'll be on the registry a lot longer than you should be. Because that DA is not going to do you any favors. They're going to make sure they do whatever they can to make sure you get what they want you to get rather than what you signed up for. I looked into whether a nunc-pro-tunc motion could ask the court to review whether the judgment statute accurately reflects the plea paperwork. A nunc-pro-tunc is where you can go in and have the courts or the judge correct a statute that is misaligned with a plea bargain. The problem is that is only like a clerical correction. So if you try to go in and do a clerical correction like that, they will go back and say, no, this has that language in it. We chose that for a purpose, and I'm not going to overturn this. Now, I can do this per se free and send it to them, but it's not going to carry as much weight as an attorney, and I will most likely be not denied. But it also gives me future leverage to take it higher if I need to, because as you can see, there's no common sense reason why that statute needs to be placed, especially with those other things being on the level assignments. I mean, I'm being punished like somebody that did something. That's like a person who went in and robbed a store and got convicted of robbing the store and then left without killing anybody. And then somebody that went in and robbed the store and then murdered somebody, they both got the same conviction or the same length of punishment for doing two different crimes. So, and I'm not trying to say I'm a saint or anything. I'm just trying to say that the punishment doesn't equal what the law states it should equal, if you know what I mean. The Oklahoma registration, their packet is flawed. The way they have the registration assignment's flawed. But here's the problem with fighting that. If I try to fight that and say, hey, your registration packet is flawed, all these people are level 1 and I'm level 2, I throw a bunch of other people in the fire with me
Right.
because they'll go, oh, yeah, it's flawed, so let's change this. And instead of changing what caused my situation,
Just make it hard for
they'll
someone
start
else.
increasing the other ones to level 2.
Right.
So
Yeah.
if I
Now,
start
someone
trying,
asked a question. Someone says to clarify, is a nunc pro tunc motion established in federal law, which means that all the states must adhere to it or not?
Nunk-pro-tunk is it is established in federal law. All states have to adhere to it, but here's the they don't have to ex the court does not have to accept it. They don't have to read it. It is a motion that is placed in. I'll look it up real quick and make sure. I'll give me just a second and I'll look that up. Okay, so it is different for states and federal. So I'll just read it. I'll just read the definition. That way they kind of get what it is. It says a nunk-pro-tunk order is not a federal law. It is a legal procedure doctrine used by courts to correct the record so the written judgment or orders matches what the court actually did or intended at the time. The phrase means now for then. In plain English, the court enters an order now that relates back to an earlier date, usually to fix a clerical mistake, omission, wrong date, wrong statute number, missing entry, or similar record area. In federal court, similar authority exists through specific rules. For example, Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure 36 allows the court to correct a clerical error in the criminal judges. So what I'm getting from this, and not to read all of it, is that the nunk-pro-tunk is state specific. So each state you can do a nunk-pro-tunk to go in and fix the statute or ask for a correction to your statute. Federally, and from what I'm getting from this, federally is a different procedure and has a different name. So state specific would be the nunk-pro-tunk. And I believe every state has the ability to file a nunk-pro-tunk motion, but federally, you have to, it's a different filing to get that done on the federal level. Did that answer the question? I hope it did.
Let's assume yes.
Okay. Okay. So the original attorney said correction would be a difficult because of the language in the statute and paperwork. We already talked about the language that it has possession language. So therefore, overturning it would be hard. Other attorney quotes were generally between $4,000 and $6,000. And as we know, they promise you the moon, they take your money and walk away with it. And nothing gets out of
Yep.
the process moving forward. Don't waste your money on an attorney that has no knowledge of the registry. Make sure you do your homework. Don't hand them $4,000 and $6,000. Especially if you haven't done your work, your due diligence of looking up exactly what can and can't be done, because I almost did this without doing my homework, and it almost cost me 6 grand of money I couldn't afford, and nothing would have come of it because now that I know the statutes and the laws, he couldn't have done. He was gonna pull my plea, and if he would have pulled my plea, he would have sent me to trial, and if I would have went to trial, I wouldn't have had the 30 grand to get through trial. There's no way.
Right.
So basically, he would have started my case over from the beginning and possibly put me in prison in the long run because he just wanted the money and I would have been stuck with no leverage and nobody to represent me after that. So families are forced to choose between needed resources and legal review that may not change anything. By the time the current registration period ends, this becomes approximately, I said 33 years, 32 years on the registry. That is a possession-based case involving a small number of images found on a household computer. This does not minimize harm to real victim or deny that the material is serious. The question is whether decades of public registration, family stigma, housing instability, lost opportunities, and possible medical impact are proportional. Here we go with this, and you're gonna, everybody's gonna love this one. So it reached my wife and it reached my children. We all know that that happens. It affected housing, school stability, employment opportunities, neighborhood life, public dignity, and my ability to be visibly present as a father. My family experienced housing instability, school disruption, public stigma, bullying, bullying, neighborhood humiliation, social isolation, and lost opportunities. My wife and children were never charged with anything, yet they carried the consequences for the last 13 years. My children carried this too. Once people at school found out my children were berated and treated differently, one son lost a girlfriend in high school because of my registration status. My middle son stopped playing high school sports because I could no longer attend his games the way a father should be able to. I missed my oldest and middle son's graduations to avoid placing them in a difficult public situation. So I was allowed to go to the graduations, but to avoid a confrontation and to avoid them getting berated or somebody saying something or pointing me out or stuff like that, because I'm prior law enforcement, so I'm a well-known person in the community. So I didn't want to add pressure on top of them in their own graduation. So I felt it was better for me to not be present and just do like a Zoom to watch their graduation. Though it was heart-wrenching not to be able to do that, and it's been heart-wrenching multiple times. Because I can't go to my grandson's birthday party in a week or so, because I mean I can, but I can't because there's going to be other families and other children there. So I don't want those other families and other children to shun my daughter-in-law and not allow the kids to come to any more stuff. So I'm avoiding things because of my registration, not because the law states I can't go to them. So I missed my oldest and middle. One son pursued law enforcement and was reportedly denied a police officer position because of my registry and status and his relationship to me. So my son applied for the Oklahoma City Police Department, 100% passed everything, got to the final stages of the interviews. They found my Facebook and his Facebook, saw that he still had dealings with me, still has a relationship with me, saw us go to Frontier City. Of course, in Oklahoma, we're allowed to go to theme parks as long as we're not loitering and with a family and, all those rules. But they saw that and said, since he still had a relationship with me and that he was connected to me and that I was on the registry, that they couldn't hire him as a police officer, even after they had already offered him the position. They took him in after the fact and told him that they weren't giving him the position because of what they found on the Facebook. Not even bad stuff, not bad material, not nothing, just that we were at Frontier City together. And the reason we were at Frontier City together was because of a work event, because we worked at a trailer factory together. And we went on a Frontier City work event where we were required to go with our families, and that we took pictures with our family at the work event. And he posted them on Facebook, and my wife posted them on Facebook. And the Oklahoma City PD said, since you are involved with him, we can't hire you. So, because of my registration, he is not hireable as a police officer, which makes zero sense because he didn't break any laws. He didn't do anything wrong. So, vigilantes, you recently used Facebook to attack not only me, but my family and people connected to me. They posted my picture, shared it with friends and family, and messaged my daughter-in-law and other relatives. They called people monsters simply because they were connected to me. False information was reportedly called into Oklahoma DHS in an attempt to get my teenage son taken away. That is not public safety. That is public shaming spreading into innocent lives. So we had a little boy come up missing, and it was really publicized. And after this little boy came up missing, some of these people that get on here and do this vigilantism went and got the registration stuff from the police department, started going through it and calling DHS on everybody on that had a child in their home. So everybody got a visit from DHS. Of course, all of us got a visit from law enforcement when this kid went missing, because every registrant gets their house searched, especially during that time. So they came and checked all of our houses, but it continued rolling after that. They came into our house and made all kinds of accusations and said this and that. My teenage son said, no, that's not happening. This is not happening. And they said, okay, we're closing the case with no future incidents, and gave us some resources and all that. I really haven't had good dealings with DHS, but actually the last dealing I had was a positive one, which is not normal in a registrant situation. She was a very nice lady, and she felt like she actually wanted to help and wanted to do what was right by the family. And granted, I've raised two other children that are now adults and have children of their own, and then this is my last one in the house. He's only 2 years away from graduation, so they're throwing this wrench all in him right before he graduates high school. and trying to get him taken away right before he graduates high school. So it was frustrating, and they also tried to call the police station, and these people don't do their homework before they do this. They called the police station and said that I'm on the computer and I'm not supposed to be. They looked at my bond stipulations on the minutes from the courthouse and saw that my bond minutes said that I wasn't allowed to be on the internet, have a smartphone, or be around my kids, which bond minutes go away once the bond is over with. So they did all of that trying to get me in trouble through the police department. So now they're not only wasting DHS resources, they're wasting law enforcement resources because they didn't do enough homework and they're just trying to take stabs in the dark to try to figure out what they can do to hurt me. And then there was, the stuff like you need to be curb stomped or you need to be a tall tree, short rope, and all kinds of stuff all over my Facebook. I had to close it down. And I tried to make a report to law enforcement. Law enforcement said they weren't credible threats, so they would take it down as a call to service, but they would not take an actual report. And I tried to tell him the statute, and the police officer refused to listen to the statute because the statute does say that if you feel that you are being threatened, not just that you are threatened. He tried to tell me that's not the statute, but as you can see, I dig heavily into statutes, so I know better, but I wasn't going to argue with him because it was pointless because he's a law enforcement officer and that's him and that's me and I'm in the position I'm in and he's in the position he's in and there's no arguing or fighting that because I would have got myself into more trouble by trying to argue it, so just moved on. Spouse can lose privacy, stability, dignity because of someone else's registry status. Children can lose housing, stability, school stability, friendships, relationships, job opportunities, milestones, and emotional safety. My children were judged through my label. It follows children into school relationships, employment, and public life. It does not stay attached to the person listed. After, so here's where it gets deep. Kimberly's medical reality. A spouse can live consequences she did not create. After a left total knee replacement, Kimberly, which is my wife, developed a serious complication, including a confirmed prosthetic joint infection. So she went in for a knee replacement surgery, and the doctor took a disliking to me because he found out about my registration status. And then after the knee replacement surgery, she began having problems. It began clicking. It began inflaming and stuff like that. And he never seen Kimberly in the office at all. Took him 6 weeks to get her into crap. My brain just went blank. To get her into rehabilitation to rehabilitate her knee. And anybody that knows anything about total knee replacement, you're supposed to be in physical therapy a day or two after the surgery so that you can get the knee moving again. So it took him 6 weeks to actually get her into physical therapy. He never seen her except for one time for 15 minutes. We had a CT done. The CT showed that she had loosening and a shadow and clearly had it was infected and he ignored it. So
And
we had to push her.
this is a new bill in Oklahoma that allows medical providers to refuse treatment because it violates their moral code. Is that correct?
Yep, that bill is in
And you got this
2025.
bill from another state. I forgot the other state.
I can't remember it. I have it in here. Give me just a second and I'll get to it. I do have it in here. I'm kind of skipping ahead a little bit because
That's all right. Yeah, skip ahead because I know we're behind.
I'm speeding up a little bit. So her care required removal of prosthesis and antibiotic spacer, prolonged IV antibiotics, blood transfusion therapy, and significant home care needs. We had difficulty obtaining adequate home health support. The stated reason given to us was Medicaid patient capacity, which we know both we all know that's not true. I became responsible for transfers, transportation, PICC line care, support, blood draws, and appointments. So I became her caregiver. During one trip for care that could have been handled at home, Kimberly fell while I was trying to get her back into the house. Kimberly is not on the registry. She did not commit a crime. Accurate. Transparent, proportional. What Oklahoma should consider, we already know this, registry consequences should be clearly stated in the plea agreement before the plea is accepted. Let me go back because I'm going to look for that actual statute. It's what I get for skipping ahead, huh?
Well, I mean, most of us aren't from Oklahoma, so we don't need to know the name of the statute. That's not helpful to any. I mean,
Yeah.
I
The
can't
met
imagine anyone's taking that kind of notes, and the odds of one of us being from Oklahoma is small. If
Yeah,
someone
that's
is from
true.
Oklahoma, they could reach out to you on the side.
Yeah, that is true.
So
So,
there's no need for that kind of detail.
okay, so the statute that's in place that was put in place in 2025 states that a care provider, being a hospital, an emergency room, any facility that's a care provider, and it even put in there and made sure to state to include home health agencies and in facility care facilities. It states that they can refuse any patient care if they believe that their moral, I believe it says moral, religious, or it's in those ranges, moral, religious, and something else. If it basically goes against their moral code, they don't have to provide treatment or provide a home health aide or provide a bed to that person. So basically, it's saying if you don't feel morally good about what you're doing, or you don't feel like you can morally go into that home as whatever your belief system is, you can say, I don't like the door handle. And you, I mean, basically, that's said. And they don't even have the, it doesn't even state, which is something I need to attack. It doesn't even state in the bill that they have to give you a reason. They don't have to give you a reason. So that bill
Wow.
needs to be changed where they have to give you a written
Well,
reason for refusing the care.
yeah.
So that's the registry consequences should be clearly stated in the plea agreement before the plea is accepted. Overlapping statutes with possession-related language should be reviewed when they create different registry levels, which they should. Oklahoma should reconsider relying so heavily on statute-based classification alone, because it's not a good system. As you can see, I've showed all the flaws just in my one case in their system. Oklahoma's risk-based assessment would look at the individual history, conduct, compliance, and actual risk. Certain non-aggravated, non-habitual level two registrants with long-term compliance should have a reasonable, meaningful review pathway, which I'm not trying to take that those people out of it, because eventually the goal is to get rid of the registry altogether. But I will say this honestly and clearly, that you're less likely to get a legislator to take on a bill that has habitual and aggravated registrants added to it. They automatically throw it out every time, unfortunately. So,
Somebody has a question in the chat. Does he know, was this law originally designed to block abortion and birth control access, and it has been broadened to include PFRs? Does this stand violate the medical Hippocratic Oath, first do no harm?
the Hippocratic Oath is not a, from what I was explained, the Hippocratic Oath is not legally binding. It's not a legal oath. So it's not legally binding. So you can't use the Hippocratic Oath to fight the statute. I
Do you know
think,
whether this was about abortion access and birth control access? Is that what the
I
bill is
believe it
intended to do?
probably, I believe it probably was, but they wrote it so broadly that they could add other things without cause. That I believe that they had it in mind that they could expand this to other things by making it as broad as they did, because Oklahoma has a history of making broad statutes, as you could see in my original statute. Oklahoma has a history of making very broad statutes so they can utilize them for their own purposes instead of legal statutes that make common sense laws, if you know what I mean. So, and I think, let's see, statute, what courts and attorneys should explain. We should, I mean, this is just me kind of saying the statute being used, the registry level tied to that statute, registration duration, and reporting obligations, whether any relief pathway exists, whether another closely related statute could reduce produce a different registry outcome, a person should not discover the true consequences only after the plea is signed. So basically, they need in your plea paperwork explaining exactly what you're fixing to go through after the plea. It's ridiculous that you, I could probably show, I don't want to because it's got my information on it, but if I showed you my plea agreement, the only thing in the plea agreement it says is, are you aware that you must register on the sex offender registration after you sign this plea agreement? That's it. Nothing else. I was told no levels, no nothing, nothing. That was all that was said about the registration, that you're required to register. So I wasn't even told how to register. I didn't even know. I had to call myself to figure it out. I didn't know I was supposed to go to DOC and get fingerprinted. I had to call on my own and figure it out. None of this stuff was explained to me at all. So I didn't have any, I just got out. And actually, what happened was I went home to my wife's apartment that she had had. I'd been in jail, a county jail for 15 months fighting my case. And so I went home to my apartment, or to her apartment, because it wasn't mine. I hadn't been paying for it. She had had to take on two jobs to pay for it to keep things moving forward. But I get out and I go home to the apartment and I'm like, I need to register, but I don't know how. So I went down to the Yukon Police Department, which is in Yukon, Oklahoma, and said, hey, I need to register, but I don't know what I'm supposed to do. And I believe I'm supposed to be a level one. So they brought my paperwork out and they said, no, you're supposed to be a level two. And it's because of the statute they use, blah, blah, blah. So, and then she goes, by the way, it took you 2 days to get in here. You have 1 day to move. And I said, what? And she goes, you have less than 24 hours to vacate that apartment you're not supposed to be living. So I haven't had a good relationship with my father for a lot of years. He didn't raise me, wasn't around most of my childhood. And I had to call my dad and ask my dad if I could stay with him because he was the only one that was outside the range that a registrant could live in. And I had to
Wow.
stay with my father that I haven't talked to in years and try to mend that relationship at the same time as going through all the struggles. Then they send my registration out in the mail, which you know it comes immediately. As soon as you register, you have to go down and check in with the new police department. And I'm getting mail at my father's house. He doesn't pay attention to the mail. He just throws it in a corner and throws my registration letter into the corner and doesn't forgets to give it to me. So I finally find it and I say, hey, did you know this came in the mail? And he's like, no, I didn't know. And so I went down to my registration officer. I was like, look, I didn't know I was supposed to come in here. And I was at like 12 days by then. So it was 2 days after the 10-day period that they give you in Oklahoma. Because you have 10 days from the date your letter shows up in the mail to register. And I said, look, my dad buried these under something and I didn't even know it was here. So now I'm here to register. And they said, well, you know that I could give you an out of compliance and go ahead and arrest you for this. And I was like, yeah, please don't do that because I'm literally first time registering. I don't know any of this process. And you're not told. You just kind of get
Yeah.
handed a letter and
Well,
handed
and
this.
it also depends, depending on who the sheriff is and what, these things are so complicated that sometimes even the law enforcement doesn't really understand it. And sometimes one, you get one sheriff and he has a certain rule, and then you get a new sheriff, they got a whole new rule. They don't, they're so complicated. You'd have to have a PhD in every single state's rules to understand them.
Yeah, and so I'm prior law enforcement. So I have to check in with a detective at the police department. So I'm not even in the sheriff's department. I'm actually at a police department. So, and I think aggravated and habitual, I actually have to check in with a detective also in our state, but I don't remember for sure. But most people check in with the sheriff department that knows how to handle all the stuff. Well, kind of. Most sheriff's departments understand the registration because they deal with it all the time. When I went into the police department, they didn't even know how to deal with it. They were like, well, I mean, let's go in here and take your picture and get you processed. And then, so the second time I registered, the first time, right? The first time, 12 days passed. So they went ahead and let it slide since it was only 2 days. And I explained to them what happened. The second time, I go in there and turn in my registration and they lose it. And DOC sends me a letter saying I'm out of compliance. And I'm like, no. And I'm going to tell everybody in this group, when you go in to register, you get a copy of your registration paper back, signed with a date on it, so that they know that you registered. Because they almost put me back in jail for non-compliance because they lost some of my paperwork. So make sure that you're writing everything you can down and getting everything 100%, and make sure you're documenting everything. I have a full folder. Matter of fact, this is my folder of everything that happened during the case, all of my registration. Not going to open it up because it would show you information, but that tells you that how organized I keep everything to make sure they can't come back on me for anything and make sure that my registration is good, because if they can, they will. And it's just, if one law enforcement officer gets upset with you, they're going to use any tool possible to put you back in there, and there's almost no fight for us on the registry after that point. So just make sure you're documenting everything. Make sure you get a binder, kind of like this right here, three ring binder. Make sure it has tabs in it. Keep all your plea paperwork, all your stuff that tells you what you can and can't do, all your probation paperwork, stuff like that. And get a copy of every time you register. That way, if they come by and say that you're out of compliance, that you can show them, no, I turned my paperwork in, I'm in compliance. They
You
also
should
don't.
actually you should make like a condensed version of this where you just say, if you're just now facing charges, here's the hard lessons I learned and the things you need to know. Like, because yeah, honestly, people who are brand new to this, they don't know anything. We should make a little mini class about that.
The first lesson that they should know is don't. If a detective tells you that if you're cooperating, you don't need an attorney. That's the first lesson. Don't ever continue talking. The only words that should come out, and I think we talked about this last week, is the
Yes.
only words that
Chris,
come
my
out of your
lawyer.
mouth is
My
attorney,
lawyer.
attorney, attorney. Nothing else. Don't answer questions. Don't do nothing until your attorney's there, because they can turn that stuff around on you real quick. But I have unfortunately been through so many things that you see on, like the wife going through the medical condition. And like I said, I'm not a nurse, and my daughter passed away when she was a year old, and I had to do all of her pick my daughter's pick line care and stuff like that, medical care. So I live with CPS, the CPT. I can't even say the word. It's PTSD, but it's complex PTSD.
CPTSD.
Yes. So I live with complex PTSD. So when they started saying you've got to do a PICC line and you've got to do medical care again and stuff like that, because of what I went through with my daughter, it kind of threw me into a spin. I was like, no, I don't want to do all this stuff again. Plus, my health isn't great. I have a bad back. I have a hip that needs to be replaced, a knee that is, I tore it, I'm pretty sure, sometime in the last couple of days. And so I had a car accident last week where somebody, not last week, probably Friday, I believe it was, somebody T-boned me going through an intersection. So it destroyed our only vehicle. So that's another icing on the cake. But I am trying to care for my wife with no incoming care, because they're using my registration to keep from bringing anything in the house. So I'm trying to care for my wife when I have to also care for myself. I'm now the caregiver. I cook dinners, cook meals, keep the house going, stuff like that, on top of my regular stuff. And then I also have my stuff. And at some points, it's not, I love her and I'll do anything for my wife, but at sometimes it gets a little overwhelming and a little kind of, I push back a little bit. I get a little frustrated and I feel bad for her because I get frustrated at her, and it's not her fault. I mean, ultimately, it's not my fault either, but I kind of get to where I get overstimulated, overstressed, worn out. She'll ask me for something simple, and I realize that I snap at her for just something simple, like, can you go get me a pop out of the fridge? And I'll snap for something simple, but it's because I'm overloaded, not because I don't love her, not because I don't want to do
Yeah.
she's asking. It's
We've
just
all
that
been there.
sometimes I just get overloaded, and it's just, and here recently the overload has been been a lot. So it's
Okay, someone has a question. When
okay.
doing your intake with the PO, they ask you to sign a paper saying, "Were you talking to a teen?" I'm not sure I understand your question, James. When doing one intake along with the PO, and they ask you to sign a paper saying you were talking to a teen, that would seem a double standard. I don't really get the question. Go on. I'll have him rephrase that. Keep going. I'll ask this person to rephrase the question.
Okay, so there is a question that says several people with Narsol, COSA, and several other groups of stock response answers when asked, why isn't the registry gone? What are you doing to help in the registry? So let me use Pennsylvania as as an example. Pennsylvania tried to do away with the registry. Pennsylvania is one of the less strict states on the registration because they don't have housing restrictions, they don't have church restrictions, school restrictions, stuff like that. They took all of that away. So here is, I am trying my best to push forward bills and writing up mock bills and stuff like that to try to get them looked at and try to get them pushed forward. Here's the problem with that. It's not that we're not trying, it's that we're beating a steel framed wall with a wooden hammer because legislators and people trying to get reelected and stuff like that, it makes them look bad. And it's a chance for them not to get reelected if they try to do
Oh,
something
absolutely.
that is not popular with the public. So
Yeah,
it's
that's
not.
exactly why I think there's no way we're going to ever get this registry ended through legislators, because anybody who does anything that's considered to be, you get people vote for you more if you do something mean to us, and if you dare to be nice to us, people use that against you because it's understood that everyone should be mean to us. Everyone should be terrible to people on the registry forever.
I think Michael T has his hand up.
Yes, Mike.
No, actually, I was just clapping at that comment that you just made because I just over the course of years, and I know there's a lot going. I took my plea in '99 and spent 20 some years on the registry. Luckily enough, I was successful to be removed, but even though I was listed as tier three in 99, by the time I got tiered at tier level one, the conditions had grown so horrendous here in Missouri. I was actually better off as a tier three. I had four requirements as a tier three. When I got tier one, I had at least two pages and they shrunk the font size down. So I'm just going to kind of end. I don't know the exact cure, but we have to do something different about the culture and people's attitude to who registrants really are. So I'll leave it at that. That's what I was going to bring up because you kind of addressed a lot of that at the beginning.
Yeah.
So thank you.
You're welcome. The big thing is, so it's not that we're fighting, it's that so we fight the good fight for a little while, 3, 4, 5 years, and then we get frustrated and then we back off because we feel that there's no path forward. So a lot of us will quit trying at some point and we try to collaborate and do this and do that. And then so it feels like we're not disjointed, but we're overwhelmed and frustrated. And we just go, you know what? I give up. There's no path forward. And that's how, honestly, I'll be honest. That's how I felt when I started looking into getting my statute corrected, getting off the registry. Oklahoma has no path whatsoever to reduce your level or to be removed if you're a level two or above. There is no reduction.
Wow.
No removal, no nothing. And even in their main, it's a 580, it's I believe it's 582.7 somewhere within there. And it states in there that DOC and the courts can increase your level, but in no way, shape, or form can they reduce your level. So there's no path off of the registration once you're on it if you're a level two. And I think it's about a 4% chance that if you apply to get off of the registration at your 10-year removal, where you apply to get off, that is about a 3 to 4% chance that they actually remove you from the registry if you apply to get that done. And that's $5,000 a pop for an attorney to go in and file that motion to get you removed from the registration at your 10-year period. They're making it, and then you've got also got the housing thing. So think about this for a second. What they've done to us with the housing thing is they've made laws to where we can't all registrants can't all congregate in one place, correct? So they've made that law. You registrants can't con more than so many registrants can't be living in a certain area or a certain apartment complex or a certain blah, blah, blah. Problem is, what they've done on the other side of it is say registrants can't live within 1,000 feet of this or 500 feet of that or be within 500 feet of that. So what they've done is squeezed registrants to where they either have to live in one congregated area or
Right.
they have to move
Or they're
out in the middle
homeless.
of nowhere. Yeah, or go to jail. And what they're trying to do is squeeze it so tight that, especially red states like Oklahoma are squeezing it so tight that registrants will completely move out of the state, is what they're trying to do there. Or they're squeezing it so tight they can either live on a dirt road somewhere in the middle of nowhere. If you have kids, that's almost impossible. Or they live in jail. Those are the two places we're allowing you to live. So they've destroyed any kind of housing for registrants as well. They've destroyed medical care for registrants and their families, not just registrants. They've taken the medical care away from families and their children. Because think about that doctor that almost my wife, and I forgot to mention this, my wife almost died of sepsis in the hospital because the infection was allowed to get so long. She was in the hospital for 8 days, given broad spectrum antibiotics to keep her alive and keep the sepsis from taking over her body. And then had to have a blood transfusion while in the hospital, and then finally got out and was on 6 weeks worth of PICC-line antibiotics, which she just ended 2 days ago. And so also she's on this PICC-line antibiotics, and then she has to go through another knee surgery to get the antibiotic spacer taken out, and then she'll have her knee replaced. So just because this doctor just chose to not take the proper steps to take care of her, instead of a six
And
to eight.
you're not allowed to do a malpractice, or you're not allowed to sue him because, well, A, he probably would cost $1 million, but because of this Kansas law that basically says if you don't feel like doing, if it's against your moral code to help this person, you don't have to.
So Oklahoma, it's a double-sided thing. So Oklahoma law, so it's hard to prove infection, right? And then also, this is the way it was explained to me. It's hard to prove infection. And also, they have to bring in an out-of-state orthopedics doctor that's willing to testify against the orthopedic surgeon that did the surgery, which is very expensive. And then on top of that, Oklahoma has another law that blocks you or makes attorneys, doesn't block, it makes attorneys not want to take the case. Because any state-funded hospital, which is where she had her surgery, has a cap of, I believe it's $250,000, a cap of $250,000. So that cap on the lawsuit means that the attorney will do all of this work and the attorney will get paid, but you'll get nothing. So it's not even worth the attorney's time or money to do the lawsuit because the doctor's protected under the hospital's capped if they're employed by the hospital. And unfortunately, this doctor is employed by the hospital. So these bad doctors run to these state-funded hospitals so that they can stay under their cap so they can stay protected. The doctor that did this to my wife has been sued 6 times and has one settlement under him. And I didn't know that until I looked it up. By the way, so you know this, Oklahoma, every state probably has this on OSCN, which is the dockets, all the court dockets for the state of Oklahoma. You can go in and look up any doctor's lawsuits that were against a doctor so that you can study what kind of lawsuits they've been through, whether they've been settled or whether they've actually lost in court on a lawsuit on a malpractice case. So you can look that up. We learned that after the fact. So now we look up every one of our doctors to make sure that they're good doctors, to make sure that they haven't been sued six times like this one has. So, and becoming her caregiver, it just, there's no reason for that. I mean, I could have even made stipulations where when the caregiver comes in to do the bandage care. So we went one day to go get her blood drawn because instead of them coming into the house to draw her blood and do her bandage care, we had to go to the hospital every Monday on that bad knee. So she's coming back into the house after one Monday and she loses her balance. And if I catch her, it's going to buckle her knee. So I have to let her fall backwards and fall on her own because it's going to hurt her worse if she doesn't fall. Problem is, once she falls down, I'm the only one there. Helping her back up can hurt her worse. So we had to call the fire department in order to be able to get her up and back into the house because of the care that was refused by the home health and the people that were supposed to come in and do the blood draws and the bandage care. So every
Wow.
Monday we had to go through that process and it scared the crap out of her thinking, I've got to leave this house every Monday to go do this stuff. And so I got to the point where we had to get her into the car, which we have a smaller car, get her into the car, get her out of the car, take her into the hospital, take her up to the second floor. So I've gotten to where I get wheelchairs to do that because she even has doctor's appointments now we have to go to. But I've gotten to the point I get wheelchairs to take her places. And my back and my hip, the way it is, it's hard for me to push the wheelchairs because I don't know if I've mentioned, but I need a hip replacement. And until she's done with her knee stuff, I can't get the hip replacement because if we're both down at the same time,
Right.
nobody's
Yeah,
going
who
to take
takes care of whom?
nobody's going to take care of us. So, and our kids, I
Wow.
mean, they have their own busy lives. They work 40 hours a week. My teenager's in school, so there's
Yeah.
sometimes like, we had our grandchildren this week, and there's sometimes we're like trying to figure out. So earlier, I had to take her to the doctor, got her to the doctor, got home, had to take her to physical therapy, which Medicaid doesn't approve in-home physical therapy, which baffles me. But even if they did, they would probably refuse it like they did the others. So I took her to physical therapy, and I was like, shoot, I've got to figure out somebody to watch my grandkids for 10 minutes. My mom lives right across the street. So I had to run my grandkids across there for 10 minutes so I could go drop her off and then come back to the house and wait an hour for her to get out of physical therapy and then take them back across the street and then go get her and then come back and bring her into the house. And I have to help her in and out of the car, in and out of the house, and in and out of this. And all the while, it's slowly breaking that hip down more. And as it breaks that hip down more, I'm trying to hope that the hip lasts through everything she's going through so that it
Right.
doesn't completely break down. Because they told me they won't replace my hip until it's completely done. And I'm hoping that it doesn't decide to be completely done before everything's done. Because once that thing breaks, there's not really a whole lot of mobility left after that. So it's just, it's been. Ever since 2012, it's been stacked one thing after another, and I'm learning these consequences are getting heavier and heavier. And then,
Right.
so HB 3040, which we talked a little on last week, that passed, now makes it to where registrants can't go within 500 feet of any place that is considered catering to children. How broad is
Yeah.
that statute?
Right.
And then aggravated and habitual aren't even allowed in those areas whatsoever, period, with no exceptions. So think about if a flock camera comes on and grabs a tag and somebody's driving by a school and they're going to a doctor's appointment. Like here in Chickasha, our police department, our hospital, our doctors, and our school are all on four different blocks of each other. They're like right across the street. So if I'm driving to my doctor's appointment, I'm within 500 feet of that school. That flock camera grabs me within 500 feet of that school. Just depends on how they want to
Yeah,
prosecute.
those cameras are scary. The cameras are scary, and then the glasses you were talking about is even more terrifying. I mean, that's like straight out of an Aldous Huxley or 1984. That's terrifying.
We've seen how many Terminator movies and how many Jetson shows and how many things that tell us how bad these things are, and we still just keep moving towards it. Just
Yeah.
it doesn't.
We've got about 10 minutes left in tonight's session, so how do
Awesome.
we're
We actually got through everything.
Are you kidding me?
That
Yeah,
we're
I
through
never
everything.
did. I looked and looked and looked. I never did find that back and forth email from you.
So, I mean, this is just some stuff that I can read off of that is the last few slides. We're almost, I think there's only like 24 slides and we're on 22. But so, what people should understand for families like mine, it becomes housing instability and public humiliation. It becomes children being berated at school, a son losing a girlfriend, a child quitting sports because his father can no longer comfortably show up. It becomes missed graduations and lost employment opportunities, including a son reportedly being denied a police officer position because of the relationship to me. It becomes an online vigilante attacking family members, false reports to agencies like DHS, and fear and isolation for spouses. Now I am concerned it may have reached into my wife's medical care, which why the title matters to me. These were consequences no one explained. The plea was one thing, the sentence was one thing. The registry consequences became something much larger. They reached into housing, my children's lives, my marriage reputation, my son's career opportunity, and possibly my wife's medical care. These were not consequences my family understood in full at the time. They were not consequences my children ever agreed to carry, but they carried them anyway. And this is my closing message. So, yeah, I was right. We're done. I've seen this system from several angles: corrections, military service, foster and adoptive parenting, the criminal justice system, and the registry. I am not here to argue that exploitation is harmless. It is not. We all know that. I'm not here to argue against accountability. I believe in accountability. Not here to, but accountability should be accurate, transparent, proportional, and focused on preventing harm, which the registration does not do. When the only realistic way to challenge a possible statutory problem costs thousands of dollars, the system becomes harder to escape, even for someone trying to do everything the right way. It does not just punish one person, it reshapes entire families.
Yeah, absolutely.
So here's the sources if anybody wants to. I'm a
Honestly, like just if they could just the number of people who get put on the registry for viewing images online, take them down. Take them off the internet. Like there's still porn on the internet from the 70s, and the cops know where every single bit of it is, and they just wait for someone to get to click on it. Take it down. I don't understand how they justify leaving it up because, for me, the only reason to leave it up is they want to fill prison beds. And I don't understand how it's even legal for them to just leave it up there waiting to trap people. Take it down.
Money,
It's the
money,
Of course, it's money.
profits.
Marijuana argument. It's the same as the marijuana argument. They leave it out there so that people can convict it so they can fill their prisons for their financial gain. That's the only reason to leave it out there. And on top of that, you would think they would want this material off the street because of how bad the material is. I'm sorry, I lost a child and watched her go through complete torture for 1 year and 10 days of her life. I am not going to watch somebody on a video screen, some child on a video screen, get tortured for my own pleasure. That's just not going to happen. It's not me. And so to say, and again, I turned in the computer that they found the stuff on because I thought I had nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
And so having a public computer in a public place with multiple people utilizing the computer, how do you logically file charges on one person? But here's how they got me and how they got me to plead. They said it. So, as you know, probably from last week, I went through a full civil case where they drained my funds completely and got my kids back. They finally gave my kids back. I separated from the adopted child because of all the things that she put us through, and we decided that it was best to go our separate ways. She would go back to her biological mother, and we would go on with our lives with our biological kids. So I was going to fight it, and I got out of jail and I started looking at all the evidence. And as you can see, I do a lot of research and stuff like that. So I started looking at all the evidence, and figuring out, hey, there's something not right here. There's something they can't pinpoint one person to this computer that looked this stuff up. Not to mention, none of my other devices in the home had anything like that on them. The devices that I used on a
Yeah, they
continuous.
don't seem to care about that. You know,
No.
like I think I told you about Chuck, when Chuck was arrested, they found some porn on his computer, and the exact same porn was on his ex-wife's computer, and both of his young teenage sons admitted. They were like, "It was us, it was us." They're teenagers because we're teenagers. We're teenagers. We were looking at other teenagers. That's what it was. His ex-wife was willing to testify about that. Both of his kids were willing to say, "It's our porn, it's our porn." The cops didn't give a shit. They wanted to arrest Chuck because they wanted to arrest Chuck, and they didn't care. They didn't care if it
So
was Chuck's porn.
I
They
went
didn't care.
in to I went in and said, look, I want to fight this. I told my attorney, I want to fight this. So it took him about a week to call me back. And he said, well, if you decide to fight this, they will just file charges on your wife and we'll take your kids back and you'll never see them again.
Yes. So they basically made it was either you go down for it or
Or
you
my
lose
wife
your kids
did
and your wife's got to
suffer.
go down for it.
They basically held my wife and kids hostage so that I would plead. That's
Yeah.
the basic gist of it. So that I would plead out, they held my wife and kids hostage. And then
Wow.
of course, I was out of money too, so there was no
Yeah.
real, I
No way around.
couldn't go to trial. There was no way. I was financially bankrupt. They had bankrupted me. It cost us almost 20 grand to get our kids back. It cost us 15 grand to just get the criminal attorney because I had an appointed attorney for 6 months while I was in prison or in my prison county jail. And of course, being a law enforcement in county jail with a sex charge wasn't that wasn't a cakewalk, and they wouldn't put me in PC. They left me in general population most of the time till they put. So I worked as a regimented inmate. I think we were past time. I'm going to make this
Yeah.
quick. I worked for the Regimented Inmate Discipline Program, which was youthful offenders that were going into the program to be able to do like a military program. Once they got out, their charges would be expunged, blah, blah, blah. So I worked for that program. And while I worked for that Regimented Inmate Discipline Program, there was a young man in there that ended up murdering somebody after he got out of the regimented end discipline program. And so I got put in general population and they celled me with this guy, knowing that he knew me, that he had just murdered somebody, and they celled me with him. And I'm not a guy that like backs down from much, but that was the first day in my life that I had to go, you know what? I'm either catching a charge tonight or I'm going to die tonight. There's only one of two things happening here, so something's going to happen to solve this. And when you're in there as an ex-law enforcement officer and somebody on a sex charge, you're hated by the inmates and you're hated by the law enforcement side.
Yeah.
Neither side likes you. So I had
Yeah.
to, so I didn't push the
How
button.
long did you serve, Trent? How long were you in?
In county,
Or just how long were you locked up total?
15 months. With a bail so high that I couldn't post it, and they wouldn't reduce my bail till I finally got an attorney that was a paid attorney. The appointed attorney would not even try to get my bond reduced. And then the day that I got my paid attorney, the bond was reduced, and I got out after 15 months.
Oh, for God's
So
sake.
I was in county jail for 15 months, and my family lived an hour away, so them coming to visit me was almost impossible.
Yeah.
And
Wow.
then the fights that I got into in there, and I'm not going to get into all that, the stuff that happened, but it was just it was definitely.
The idea that anybody going to prison for long stretches helps them, does makes them a better member of society. Like, I just can't. I cannot imagine what we are thinking. You know, this guy that I was helping who got mauled by the police dog, he served 5 years in prison for having consensual sex with a young, 13 when he was 19. How does going to jail for 5 years help anything in anyone's life?
It's
Yeah,
supposed to
it's
be
insanity.
correction. It's
It's
supposed to be
insanity.
corrections, but it's no longer corrections. It's about how much money they can make off the inmates that they put in.
It's absolutely about money. Right. Yeah,
They
because they
don't.
don't feed you enough. You got to pay for commissary. You got to pay for, your phone calls. You got to pay for video calls. You got to pay for every single thing. They don't give you coffee. You got to pay for your coffee. You got to pay for, yeah, it's a racket. The entire thing is a racket. And the fact that
And
people can't see that, it's just mind-boggling.
there's absolutely no rehabilitation in prisons anymore. I worked on the prison side. Remember, I was a correctional officer for 8 years of my life. I was also a decorated Navy person. Navy, I was in the Navy, with a medal of going above and beyond the call of duty. And so I watched the whole thing unfold in front of my eyes, and the whole system that I believed in crashing down on me, and looking at the other side of it. So I've seen both sides of the system.
Yeah, that
The
must be really
system
upsetting.
fails. The system fails both sides, because the law enforcement officers that actually get into it, that want to do good, can't because of the system that has been created. And the people that want to rehabilitate on the other side and get back into society and have a normal
Can't
life
either.
again can't. Recidivism rates are outrageous right now. Because anything they can do to put you back in a jail cell, they'll do. And you can
Absolutely.
see they're using these laws, especially the registry laws, as
Absolutely.
their vehicle since they lost their marijuana vehicle. This
Yep.
is the new vehicle
Yep.
to create.
Yeah, and this kid who got mauled by the police dog, they were trying to charge, they were gonna make him do an ankle monitor, like a $400 base fee plus a monthly fee and a some sort of breathalyzer. I can't remember what he called that thing. And both of those are clearly just meant to charge you more money, right? Everybody just wants to make more and more and more money. And yeah, it's just outrageous.
It's a full
All
money
right.
system.
We're over time. I just want to share with everyone how to share the chat. See, 2 weeks from now. Oh, 2 weeks from now, it's going to be Jay, the podcast guy, who I'm talking to about maybe taking over some of the educational portion of the war. So he's going to be on in 2 weeks. So if you want to come and see what the new person who would be interviewing people like I do, what he's going to be like, that's next week. Okay, so if you go in the chat, there's those three dots at the top, and you can choose save chat if there's stuff in there that you didn't get a chance to read, if you want to be able to have access to it later. There we go. Thank you everybody for coming. Man, it's been a rough day. So thank you for coming. Love you all, and I will see you in 2 weeks. Oh, and also, if you believe in praying or sending positive vibes, Chuck is really miserable. He's got this weird thing going on in his head where all sounds just ring and ring and ring and ring, and it's just like buzzing and just terrible in his head all the time. He's just losing his mind. So send him some positive vibes or pray for him. That would be great.
Will do. Thank you for having us. Thank you for having me on, for sure. And thank you
Thank you,
for.
Trent. Are you coming to Narsal by any chance?
I cannot make it. I can't afford right now. There's no way for, with all the medical stuff coming
Well,
on.
and all your medical stuff. You can't leave your wife for 2 weeks. You can't leave
Yeah,
your wife for,
there's.
yeah.
I
All
would
right.
love to, but I can't afford the ticket.
One of
So.
these days, I would like to meet you in person. So the next time you end up showing up at a conference like that, let me know.
So, and let's do this. And
Yes,
I
please.
mean, I know there's a lot of people on here. You just live in Missouri, right?
Officially, I live in Wichita, Kansas, but right now I'm in Missouri. I have a house in both places, Wichita
Okay.
and Missouri.
So we're pretty close to each other, because I'm down in Oklahoma. So if you
All
want
right.
to,
Well,
we
if you ever
can.
find yourself in either Wichita, Kansas or St. Louis, if you're passing through on your way somewhere, look me up. I
I
have two
will
extra
do.
bedrooms. I have two extra bedrooms in Wichita and not so many in
You
St. Louis.
had me thinking about, because like I said, I was a transport officer for a while, or a transport person for a while, and you had me thinking about which state was which one. Like, I have to think in my head which state I can stay for more days at before I have to register, because each state's different. Because I think Missouri is 3 days and Kansas is 10 days.
Podcast that Jay runs is called Registered America, and it's on a thing called Rumble.
Rumble. Okay.
I don't know much about Rumble, but that's the podcast that Jay does. And of course, when I send out the hey, we're getting this guy to come on next week email, I'll have, a way for you to see if you want to, because he does have quite a few podcasts already done. He seems like he's fairly new to it, but his pre-arrest job was stuff like that, so he's a natural at it.
Gotcha.
But anyway, that's me today.
That's kind of what I wanted to know, if he was a ally or if he was a registrant or a significant other.
I don't think he necessarily brings that up on his podcast very often. And if that's on purpose, I don't want to out him.
Yeah, I understand. I just wanted to, because there's some people that will come to you and say, "Hey, I want to join your Discord, or I want to join your group, or I want to do this." Then they get in there and they start doing things that are completely opposite of what they intended, and then they
He's
start.
anti-registry. He's trying to fight the registry. He's trying to point out things about the registry that are bullshit.
No, I
He's
agree. We are all on the same page. Oh, on the Discord, I'll send you an email to send out to your
He's
so.
definitely an ally. Definitely an ally.
Awesome. I'll send you a email to send out to your subscribers for the
Yes, please
Discord.
do that about your Discord. Yes, I would definitely love that. And honestly, if anybody has something that all my members need to know, reach out to me, and I'm happy to use my email list to share whatever information people need.
Thank
All right.
you. Thank you again for having
Thank you,
me.
everybody. Thanks for coming. See you in 2 weeks.
Oh. Let's see.